I'm going to talk today about my ayahuasca experience. Disclaimer, right up front, so that we can see if I can offset some of the hostility I know that I'm going to be targeted with. I had not a bad experience with the plant, and not a bad experience with, because it's not really a plant. It's not, to me, it didn't feel like a plant or a drug. It was an experience. And to me, it felt like a psychic experience. And I'll get into that in a minute. So it's hard for me to sort of catalog this in my life as a drug experience, but okay. There was extreme negativity about this. And I am going to be critical of the way people are using ayahuasca in the West. And I'm going to be critical of one ayahuasca group. It's the first group I had contact with. I'm sure there are better people out there. But my critique of it being used in the West still stands, because whilst this was a bad experience, the way people are marketing this and what people think this will do for them leaves it wide open for this. So the argument, you just had a bad experience, doesn't stand. I know when I release this video, as much as I'll be hit with a torrent of hostility from the ayahuasca community, ha ha, if you can believe that, some of the most malignant, narcissistic, ferociously arrogant people in the ayahuasca community, allegedly a community that's built on peace and love and the dissolution of boundaries, but I've seen how they operate online and they're awful. I'm not saying the ayahuasca community in its totality is awful, but if you are in the ayahuasca community, I would say this to you, you need to clean up house. There's people involved in ayahuasca ceremonies and in the ayahuasca community who are, and I do this for a living, some of the most ferociously malignant narcissists that I came across. And I came across too many in the setting up of different ceremonies before this one I went to, and of people I've spoken to about it afterwards. You don't need to attack people who critique the use of ayahuasca. It's dangerous. Simply put, it is dangerous. You can't deny it. I'm amazed that people are getting away with this. I'm amazed. There's been a few deaths in South America associated to an ayahuasca ceremony, not the drug. I don't think, I'd be surprised if the drug itself could kill you, but the vomiting and shitting, the violent vomiting and shitting that goes with it will eventually take somebody out. I'm sure it will. It's no joke, this thing. Okay, so when I eventually went to an ayahuasca ceremony, it's because a friend of mine recommended it to me. I was in Prague at the time, working, and I flew up to Geneva for 3 days, particularly to do this ayahuasca ceremony. We went there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We had a timetable. It wasn't due to start until 10 o'clock at night. So we went upstairs and rested in the bunks upstairs until it was due to start. At 9:30, somebody came into the room that we were in and was very hostile and aggressive with us and said, "Why are you in here? We're starting in 5 minutes." And we were like, "Well, it's not time yet. There's no reason for us to be, what, you know, if it's a rigid schedule, we're within the schedule. What's the problem?" So we were harried downstairs. Then when we got into the ceremony room, we were told off because we didn't have mats. And I was like, I wasn't aware that we needed to bring a mat. "Well, it was made clear in the emails." And I'm like, "Well, if it's made clear in the emails, I'm not sure why 4 out of the 25 people here don't have a mat. It may have been made clear-ish, but like, I'm not the only person who does have a mat." So there was 2 bad bumps before we started. And I was like, my God, this is horrendous. The atmosphere of the room, in the room, I'd say there's like 25 people and 15 of them were just glowing with egoic, stiff egoic pride. They were the psychonauts. They were the Illuminati. They were the initiated. They were the ones who could see. And I'm like looking at these fucking middle class, white kids with dreadlocks, these fucking Trustafarians. And I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. Stop it or I'll slap your little spoiled face for you. So we were treated with, because we were late and we had no mats, we were the bad ones, treated with hostility. Right before a ceremony where we're going to be given a powerful psychedelic. So I'm thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, here we go. I totally blame the organizer for that. That was you just can't be that poorly organized. I can't believe he didn't have a list. Like, if it was so important that everybody be in the room, he should have had a list and he should have checked we were in. So then people are huffingly moving their yoga mats. And I'm like, if you're so fucking enlightened, why have you got a cob on because you have to move your territory? Have you already claimed that quarter meter as your space? Oh, great enlightened egoless one. Oh, great fucking hero of humility. It was a disgrace. It was a fucking disgrace. Then the, what do they insist on calling them? The shaman. The shaman comes in. A 35-year-old Ecuadorian geography teacher who then subjected us to a 40-minute long lecture about his life. He whispered it, and we all had to sit there with candles blazing, listening to this torrent of self-indulgent gibberish. I want to connect with my ancestors. I want to be with my grandfather. I want to know. And it was just a litany of how this middle-class kid had lost, felt like first world guilt, had lost his connection with spirituality, and how that made him be a shaman, and how he'd never reconnected successfully. But it sounded like he was saying, I hope tonight's the night because I've never done it before. And I'm going, oh my God, help me. And as I sat there in the room, I was thinking, what is this? What am I looking at right now? And I was like, I'm looking at spiritual capitalism at its finest. A bunch of middle-class, privileged white people from the first world, of which I am one, seeking to cleanse themselves, to do two things. One, to purge themselves of first world guilt, materialism, capitalist guilt. And secondly, whilst doing that, it's such a fucking sleight of hand these fucking dummies are trying to pull. These pretentious, God, I hate them. Christ, I hate them. These are the people that JP Sears is lampooning every time he releases a video, the spiritual capitalists. Oh, the hypocrisy. They're such hypocrites. And simultaneously, they want to plug in to spirituality, and not just spirituality, tribalism. They want to plug into the ancient, the foreign, the exotic. They're tourists. They're simple tourists. There's nothing more going on there than tourism and a desire to be more enlightened than their friends on Facebook. That's all it is. There wasn't a single sincere individual in that room other than all the experienced people. I didn't trust them at all. My friend, who's battling with CPTSD issues with something to do, it doesn't matter, that's his private business. He falls into the category of people who were sincere. The people who've not done it much, who were there thinking that it would help them overcome childhood trauma. And there was five or six people, and they were terrified. I could see the feeling in the room was the people who were in their egoic, they're like sat. What is it with people who fucking do yoga who make this face? What the fuck is that? Just do your poses, get your workout, meditate, and take that mask off. You are not enlightened. You're not enlightened. You gingerbread latte sipping fuck. It's the hypocrisy. It just drives me mad. And then you have people who are genuinely scared. Kids, you know, people in, there's my friend who's, I think he's around my age, and his girlfriend, she also comes from quite severe trauma, and they're there trying to figure something out. You've got people who've done it like 18 times, and they're the ones who are floating off the mat. And then you had like five people who were, I would estimate between the ages of 23 and 28, who were vulnerable. And that's not funny. It's funny lampooning Trustafarians. I'll do that all day. But it is not funny talking about people who are there because they're in pain and they're looking for help and they were vulnerable before they came in. And I could see them shit themselves. Because as the shaman is going through, is trying to sort of expunge his first world guilt for living a privileged life, which was, that was all it was. Somebody faking their connection to something authentic and ancient while simultaneously telling you that they've never done it and that's what they desire to do that night. And where all his dildo, his dildos, plural, where just the emotional dildo for this guy who wants to role play that he's a fucking shaman. And while he's doing it, he's slow snorting tobacco. So he's going, I want to connect with my ancestors. And swallowing his tobacco-infused phlegm in a totally fucking silent room. And then he starts again. I want to see the magic of the snake. And I'm just going, is this a fucking Monty Python sketch right now? What the fuck are we all doing in here? What the fuck is this horse shit? Then they gave me tobacco to snort. And I was like, well, everybody else is doing this. I'll be all right. Well, I used to snort coke when I was, I had quite the cocaine addiction up until the age of 28. And so I hoofed it. I hoofed two palms full of tobacco infused water up my nose. And it's only tobacco. That's the worst drug experience of my life. The worst of anything I've taken, I've accidentally, you know, when I was like 21, I took base, which is like the paste that they turn into speed. It's more powerful than speed as amphetamines. If you, I don't know if you have that word wherever you are, base is the paste. And I took too much paste and it was a horrendous experience. I've taken too much acid and been eaten alive by demons for 9 hours. This was worse. It only lasted half an hour, thank God. But I genuinely thought I was going to have a heart attack. The tobacco is ferocious. Before I get into the drug experience, I just want to say this. If you have childhood trauma, for the love of God, don't go to one of these ceremonies. Just don't do it. It's not safe. And I, you know, believe me, before you say in the comments, I know this person and they're great and I know this person and that, I'm sorry, but unless they are trained to a high level in childhood trauma, CPTSD, what to do if somebody goes into crisis, I wouldn't trust them. I wouldn't trust them. Here's a little horror story from that night. When I started to speak to the ayahuasca spirit, which I did, that's real. That's a real thing. When they tell you you speak to Mother Ayahuasca, you do. I'll get into that in a second. But she told me to leave the room. She said, leave this room right now. And I was like, no problem at all with that, Mrs. Ayahuasca. And off I went up to my bunk. And I didn't return. I refused and I left the next morning. I was like, I'm not going to be a party to this. My friend told me one of the girls who'd come for help, who was vulnerable. Although I have two stories like this. One of them I saw directly and another one I didn't. I heard about one of the girls who'd come for help and was vulnerable. God knows what's happened to her. She's like, she looks 24, 25 years old. She looks scared out of her wits. I leave the room and apparently 3 hours later, she's crawling across the floor, whispering, help me, help me. Nobody helps her. Nobody helps. People walk over her to leave the room to throw up and take a shit. I don't know why she's there. You don't know why she's there. But the way this is marketed is that it leaves people believing that it's going to heal trauma from childhood. Could you imagine if that girl had been, let's say, the victim of sexual assault or suffered domestic violence at the hands of an abusive boyfriend, or still was. She was stuck with an abusive boyfriend, but she couldn't find the strength to leave. These are the stories I have to deal with every day. I don't know why she's there, but say it's something like that. And then this girl goes through the experience of putting her trust and her psyche in other people's hands and She's left to crawl across a floor, whispering, please help me, please help me. My friend said he couldn't help her. And I'm like, you know, who's in charge? Like, it's not his job to help. There's supposed to be helpers there. We were told there'd be people there not taking the drug. But apparently everybody did. And apparently it was a stronger mix than normal. I'm like, there's no controls here. There's clearly no controls here. You don't know what the mix is. You don't know what the dosage is. This isn't science. This is just people just doing it for a jolly. Apparently he just pulled out, I didn't see him pull it out, but he pulled out like this dirty looking bottle of Evian, and then they started cooking it up. I'm like, oh, what the fuck, man? The other story from that night on the flip side was an English kid that I got the train. We both left at like 8 o'clock in the morning. I just need to be out. And I got the train with him and we spoke for an hour or so, and he opened up to me and he said that he'd had childhood trauma and that's why he was there. I was like, well, surprise, surprise. It seems to be the standard thing that people are going for. And he took 3 doses, big ones, and got nothing. Fine, that's the way it's supposed to work. But the shaman himself said to him, ayahuasca has not chosen you. I think you should leave tomorrow. And I'm like, this kid's 21. He's been bullied his whole life. He feels like his mom doesn't love him. His dad is like some hyper-intellectual, really amazing, high-flying diplomat who's no time for him. He goes because this is a last-ditch effort to get some semblance of why he lives in the world, and the leader to him, because I saw through this fucking 35-year-old twerp. Ugh. I'm not saying he was narcissistic. I just think he's really misguided. The narcissists were the people around him, were the people who were the regular goers. They were ferocious, malignant narcissists. He himself, I think, is just a dope who needs to get his life together. He just looked, talked, and acted like a drug addict who couldn't cope. He had, what do they call it, affluenza. You know, affluence and influenza, affluenza. That's what he was suffering from. And he's desperately trying to break his way out, but he's a druggie. I was a druggie. A druggie knows a druggie. And I worked with druggies for the probation service. I know people who can't cope without a crutch. I know it. I know, you know, addict knows addict. And that's all he is an addict. And that's his addiction, is running the ceremonies and singing songs to people and making up chants and claiming that they're ancient tribal chants that he got from his grandfather, which they are not. And basically, he's a fraud. He's a walking, talking charlatan. But this kid who's 19 or 20 looks at him as like, he's come from South America. Well, if you've come from South America, well, that just means all fucking bets are off. Oh, I live, my gated community is near to the edge of the jungle. Well, then, surely you are the enlightened one. You know, say no more, sir. Here's my brain, here's my money, here's my trust. And this guy had just said to him, Mother Ayahuasca has rejected you. And I was like, great, that's fucking great. That's fucking great. What a fantastic, responsible way to run a ceremony. To the positive aspects of it, the ayahuasca experience, it is real. Don't do it. You don't need it. None of you watching this on YouTube now are doing it for the right reasons. More specifically, the conversation that I had with ayahuasca wasn't just with one woman. It was with a group of people, and it started 7 nights before the ceremony. So that's why I say I've had various psychic experiences in my life. You can believe me or not believe me, it really doesn't matter. And I was trying to communicate with her for 7 nights before, but couldn't, but was getting little snippets. And then on that night, I was like, oh, it's you guys and girls. There's a group. She's the head of a group in my experience, in my subjective fantasy, delusion, hallucination, whatever you want to call it. But you can do question and answer with it, which means to me, it's totally distinct to other psychedelic drugs, because you can't question and answer. There's no dialogue. And you can be quite lucid during the dialogue. Initially, she was very grumpy with me and very curt. And over the, I think I was dialoguing with her semi-lucidly for about 4 hours, she became more and more humorous. But it wasn't just her answering me. There was other people there who would speak on her behalf as well. And I was told, you, meaning me, you don't need this. You shouldn't be here. You're wasting our time and we have stuff to do. So we're busy. We have stuff to do and you're wasting our time. And I was like, well, I offer guidance to people and I want insight into help them more. And they were just like, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you mean? Well, people pay me for guidance. Don't know what that means. Don't know what it means. Are you saying you help people? Yeah. Are they okay? Yeah. Are you okay? Suppose so. Well, you don't need this then. And it was really brushing me off. It was like very, very much brushing me off. And I had to insist and go around. But I was told a couple of things. See, this video is already going to really piss people off in the ayahuasca community because I'm pointing straight to the elephant in the room. So, and I know that it's going to really wind people up and they'll come after me. But it gets worse. Ayahuasca told me that if you're not from there, you have no business taking the drug. It's never supposed to leave that land. She didn't say it. She showed me. She showed me the feet in the soil of the people who are from there, who are from that earth, from that soil where it grows. She said, it's for them. It's for them. I said, well, what about offering insight? And she was like, it's not. There was this. She was laughing at me. She was contemptuous at first. And then she started laughing at me. She was like, "There's no, what do you mean by insight?" I said, well, I don't know. Well, tell me what it's for then. And I just got back to the vision of the feet in the soil. She said, it's for people who are from here. If you're from the soil where it grows, it's for you. And I was like, but I want to use it for this. And there was this sense in which my capitalist thinking, my linear thinking, like I want insight to give to people and then they're going to pay me and my status on YouTube is going to go up because I'll have more insight. And they were like, all of that is just... She was like, it wasn't words, it was visions. But she was like, that's the problem. That's your fucking problem. You're coming here so that you will, over there, one day, become. So, and she said, that's your problem. She said, just deal with that. She said, none of that's ever going to happen. None of that ever happens. Only this happens. And I was like, what's this? What do you mean only this happens? And then things became a little bit more like an acid trip because it became repetitive. If you've done acid, everything echoes. The visuals echo, the sounds echo, the concepts echo, the thoughts echo, and it started echoing. So if I asked a question and didn't listen to the answer, I would just be told it again, the same answer, but visions, and it would just echo. And the way that vision would come through, the feeling would get, nobody said it, but the feeling I would get was, I've told you once. So I'd be like, why can't I get an answer? I've fucking told you once. She's not mean, but she doesn't fuck around. This was a no fuck around woman. She was like, I have stuff to do. You do not need this. You're a tourist. Go away. You don't need this. So I was told nobody. So there was the other reason why I hesitated about releasing this, because people were like, oh, that's kind of racist. You're saying other ethnicities shouldn't be taking this. And I would just say, that's what I saw. That's what I saw. It wasn't even like everybody in South America is free to take this. It was if your bare, dirty, naked feet come from the earth where that plant grows, the answer is it's for you. It's within. She showed me a circle. And she was like, you're inside the circle. And the circle, of course, was a snake. And the snake, of course, had the tail in the mouth. But I was like, what's the point? And she's going, what do you mean point? What do you mean? Because she would get pissed off at me because I'd be like, "What? We do this so that." And she's like, there's no so that. There's no point. If you're from here. So it's like, have you ever seen Amistad? Where Singwei is trying to communicate with the lawyer that's played by Matthew McConaughey, but he doesn't speak Tembe, and Singwei doesn't speak English. So they start trying to draw in the dirt, and they do like symbols. It was like that. It was like she was going, how can I make this fucking child understand? So she showed me the feet in the earth, the snake around, and she was like, this is our people. This is our tribe. And I was like, does that mean nobody can join? And she was like, well, are these your feet? Are these your dirty feet in the soil? I was like, no. And there was no answer then. So there was this paradigm. I say it was a dialogue, but it had rules. And if she just didn't want to, if I was asking something totally pointless, it would be silence. Silence. Not, oh no, that's not for you. Not now. Boom, nothing. If I asked something that was okay and that was for me, I'd get an answer. But if I kept pushing, I'd just be given the same answer. And it would echo. It would be like, and then they started taking the piss out of me. They started mocking me for my sort of, I was made to feel like I was massively overcomplicating my life. And this whole thing of like, what about being a life coach? And they went, no, that's fine. I was like, but am I allowed? Is it right? Is it wrong? And they were like, what the fuck do you mean? Like, what do you mean? You know, within your tribe of whoever listens to you, are you helping them? Yeah. Are they happy? Yeah. Are you happy? Yeah. Well, fuck off with your questions. There was nothing more. It was like my mind was obsessed with the next level and the next thing. And they were just like, there is no next level. There is no next thing. I was also told, she was like, you should never take drugs, any drugs. She said, you're way too sensitive to take any drugs ever. No smoking, no drinking, nothing. That's what she told me. And since then, oh God help me, I have become massively allergic to wheat. I had a wheat allergy before. It got 10 times worse to the point where I can't even have a flavoring in food that's got yeast extract in it. So it's not classed as an allergen, but if it has anything that's even looked at grain, I could break out, I get red eyes and I get all sorts of problems. My vision gets blurry. And I'm now, as of 6 weeks ago, allergic to alcohol. That's what she said to me. She said, you can't do it. She says, you're too sensitive, way too sensitive. You shouldn't be doing that. I was like, okay. So I wanted to gather more insight that I could share with people. And there was very, very little. I was like, please tell me what I can do to help people. They have trauma. They're in pain. They suffer. And they were like, okay, we understand pain. We understand suffering. I said, well, what do you do? And I was talking to the group as well. What do you do with pain and suffering? Oh, fuck. We dance. Oh, I said, what am I supposed to teach people? They said, teach them to dance. And I went, how? Like, what? Is this what I came all this way? Is this what I'm supposed to fucking go back with? Dance? And they said, yeah, just dance. Just dance. And I was like, how? How do I teach them? What dance? What style? How does it go? And then this young boy showed up with a drum. And I would go, what dance do I teach them? And he'd go, dun-dun. And I said, please, like, what's the therapeutic modality? What's the theory? Dun-dun. Okay. Is it just dance that I'm supposed to teach them? Dun dun. What music am I supposed to teach them? Dun dun. And then it became funny. Like they were laughing at me and I was laughing as well. And we were all laughing because I kept asking these questions and this kid was just going, dun dun, dun dun. And I'd ask a question and his answer was, dun dun. I was like, this is some Zen shit right here. I'm being frozen out passive aggressively by the ayahuasca tribe. And beyond that, there wasn't much insight that I can share with you that you wouldn't have heard other people say in terms of psychedelics. The respect for life, seeing life in everything, seeing life in all things. I walked away from, it was held in a primary school, which was weird. And I had to walk to the train station. So I had to walk past cows in a farm. And they were looking at me. And I looked at them, the cows in this farm. It was like five or six of them, and they looked up, and they went moo. And I was looking at them, and I'm looking at their eyes, like I can see a glistening of light in their eyes. And I'm thinking, the animal's alive. And a part of my brain's going, yeah. I was like, no, that thing's alive. That's alive. Yeah. And it's saying moo. And I was like, oh, moo, not moo. And I can't put into words what that means. But I understood in that moment, and I don't understand it now. I've lost it. But I was like going, oh, they mean moo. Not moo, but moo. And moo had a meaning. And there would be, you know how if you're not into dogs and you don't like dogs, you can't communicate with them and you don't know what they want. But when you live with a dog and you've lived with a dog with its own personality for years, it doesn't talk to you, but it communicates with you. You know its moods. You know when it does this. You know when its tail does that, or it looks at you like you learn it. And I just became really aware that, like, if you hung around with cows, you would definitely understand the difference between moo and moo. You would know those two moos are different communications. And I was just stood there going, fuck, the cow can moo. It's like, it's alive. It's a living thing. Other bits of insight from the thing again was like, there's no up, there's no down, there's no in, there's no out, there's no after, there's no, as a Westerner, I was being laughed at for being about some other world, like doing stuff so that, and they were just like, there's no so that. That none of that happens, which is weirdly close to what I was taught when I was a teenager and I wanted to study Zen Buddhism. And I had a good class in Birkenhead under Sensei Terry Ezra, an Aikido instructor, but he's also a great Zazen teacher. And he would say the same thing, that like we do stuff symbolically a lot in the West. So it's funny with the West, in the modern world. There's no such thing as West anymore. It's funny because if you look at like a culture that we would consider to be more connected with the earth, we would go, oh, look, it's quite patronizing. It's like a left-wing racism, patronizing racism, liberal racism is you're better than me because you, this is the Slavoj Žižek interpretation, you're better than us Westerners. We lost our connection with the earth. We lost our connection with the seasons, with the mountains. You with your rituals, your dances, and your symbols, you're the real. We're the fake. We're artificial. We've lost our way. And of course, all of that's very patronizing, because behind all that, what you're basically saying is the burden of the first worlder, of the developed worlder, of white Europeans, as it used to be, but now it's everybody who lives in the more civilized world, is, oh, we are burdened by the fact that we're so much more advanced than you fucking primitives, is actually the hidden message. Even we hide it from ourselves, but that's actually the message. And it's not that I want to give it all up. I'm not going to give up my fucking BMW and my nice apartment to go and live in the dirt and possibly get like a gum infection in South America. I'm not fucking doing that. No. But I want to sit here and say, oh, your life is so much better than mine, whilst secretly, it's what Alfred Adler calls a life fiction, while secretly I'm going, oh, the burden of my great life, my good dental care, my wonderful medicine, no, very, very, the chance of me knowing people who will die in labor is small. The chance of the infants that are born dying is really small compared to here. But we're ignoring all that, like, oh, you're close to nature with all your symbols and rituals. And actually it's us that has all the symbols and rituals. They have very few, very, very few. If you still look at like the old tribal ways of doing things, the wise thing, the healthy thing they've done is they've kept the symbols and the rituals to a minimum. Ours are overwhelming. We have so many graven images. We have so much spectacle. We have so many symbols. We're lost in symbols, and that's what's killing us. So that's your life becomes a symbol. And that was what she was telling me was a problem. The only other insight that I really got from it that was, I can't express it verbally in a way that I think that you would find particularly useful. But she warned me against And I've actually stuck to this one. I've been good with it. She warned me against separating body from mind. She was like, "Don't." She's like, "You're going to, but try not to. It's the same. These are false divisions. It's false divisions. Come back down to earth." Was the main message, and I would see being down on the earth, like I was literally lying on the earth. Like my perspective was, here's the earth, and I'm like this, and that's the vision she gave me. She just take my head and go, come back down to earth, and she's my head's on the floor, and she go, you see, isn't that better? But like that, she wasn't like, you see, my child, isn't that better? She was like, isn't that better? You can see clearly now, can't you? Fuck off. So. What would I say about doing it? I would say don't. I would say don't. But you might be sat there going, I want to have the experience that you just described to me. Yeah, well, I was very lucky. I didn't puke up or shit. But I heard the people who did. And it sounded very, very powerful. I got out. I am pretty tough. I'm pretty strong and pretty boundaried. And I found it a very, very disturbing experience. In the end, for me, it was okay. But the thing that bothered me the most was the people who were attached to it. And as I said, like you'll see in the comments, once the ayahuasca community gets onto what I've said, you'll see them in the comments. And they're not gonna be hard to pick out. They'll be really spiky, really passive aggressive. All of the counter arguments will be to the man. They'll be ad hominem and a lot of straw man. I do not recommend this experience at all. I think I would recommend acid before this, and acid is powerful and disturbing and upsetting. It's just if you said to me, okay, here is a guaranteed structure. We know the dosage, we know the environment, we know the people. Would you, Richard? You know, I hopefully will be running retreats this year if we're ever allowed out of our houses again. Would you, under those circumstances, advise people to do ayahuasca retreats? And I would say I'd be more open to it, but it's just not necessary. It's not necessary. You don't... Let me change gears for a second. I wrote, I'm in the process of writing a book, and it's sort of autobiographical to help people understand through stories and metaphors how I've come to the conclusions that I've come to. And I wrote something a couple of days ago that after I wrote it was smarter. I was smarter after I wrote it than, no, whoever wrote that was smarter than me. Do you know what I mean? Like I wrote it down and I was like, holy fuck. That's really good. Once the idea is externalized and expressed and you read it back, you go, oh shit, that's like you can use it when it exists externally to push off, to go somewhere else. And I was talking about my use of magic. Like I used to use magic when I was a kid because I had riddled with childhood trauma, really, really unpleasant, like sexual, psychological, physical abuse, in-house stalking when I was at boarding school at the hands of a really, really unpleasant individual that went on for longer than a year. A lot of things that really, really damaged me. And I thought the problem was me. So I started using psychedelics when I was 13 years old. And I stuck with drugs until I was 28 years old. Even despite the fact that I had been effectively a drug counselor for the probation service one time. And I knew the addiction cycle inside out. We were trained from a cognitive behavioral point of view in the addiction cycle. But none of that saved me. None of that saved me. Just hold that as a placeholder. None of that saved me. My psychology didn't save me. I got pretty good with tarot cards and the I Ching, the Book of Changes, the I Ching, the Book of Changes. And to the point where, even to this day, if I gave anybody a tarot card reading, you would walk away from it going, I think that guy's psychic. I don't do anything other than read the cards, nothing. Or read the coins, nothing. I look at you, I then internally I communicate with what the tarot is pointing to. I make an assessment of you, which is like, they call it cold reading. And then I look at what the tarot or the I Ching has said, and I put it together and I create a synthesis. And I offer it back to you and I go, is this what's going on? And the people are like, oh my God, that's so accurate, so on the point, da 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 da. So I got some advancement in that. Advanced in psychology. Even people who don't like me are not saying that I don't understand psychology. Even people who absolutely hate me, usually that's not their criticism. Their criticism is that I'm a cunt. That's what they say. It's not, they don't usually say he's a cunt, doesn't know what he's talking about. They just say the guy's a cunt. There's the psychic stuff. I'm not a beginner level with that. I read tarot cards in the I Ching for 10 years of my life. I'm not beginner level. I'm not advanced. I don't have a natural propensity. I don't think I'm psychic. I don't think I'm psychic. I think you can cold read people as a psychologist, then use the message that comes from the I Ching or the tarot, and then you can feed it back. And it's so on point. It feels to the person like you're psychic or clairvoyant, but you're not. With magic, use that on and off for probably 20 years. Ritual magic, sometimes sexual magic, and got results. Drugs, used them, got some results. The problem with all of this stuff, and this is what I want everybody to walk away, who's lasted 41 minutes of hearing me go on, to walk away with, is you can't shortcut genuine spiritual growth. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as shortcutting. Your job is your job. Your dharma is your dharma, and it's yours. It's not mine. It doesn't belong to some fucking fraudulent shaman. It doesn't belong to a bunch of twatish first world trustafarians posturing that they're fucking Zen monks. It doesn't belong to them. It doesn't belong to a therapist or a coach or a guru. It's yours at the end of the day. I can help. Other people can help. But it's your burden. It's your dharma. It's your task. It's the puzzle that you've been gifted with to solve, to resolve the issues in your own life. And there's no hacks. You can get, like with magic, you can get real results with magic. What I wrote when I was writing about it, and I use Crowley as an example, Aleister Crowley. Say if you're, how should I put it? So there's a measure of authentic growth. And then there's a measure of like psychedelic insight, magical skill, psychic insight. What else did I mention? Psychological insight. Are we aware that you can be at a very low level of authentic, I'm calling it spiritual growth. Sorry, I don't know what else to call it. A really low level, and actually get to a very high level in all of these. You could be authentically quite small and quite immature, but go to heights with DMT. Go to heights with magic. Go to heights with sex magic. Go to heights with clairvoyance or psychic skills. But if you're a twat, you're still a twat. And that's why there's loads of twats that we all know about. Why do you know about them? Because they're out there flaunting it. They're like, look at me, I can fucking... Na-na-na-na. And they want, because they're fundamentally, they're narcissistic. They're plugged into fame and being seen. But their growth is small. So Aleister Crowley, in the magical world, this will piss people off as well, he really was advanced. He really was. He was no slouch. He pushed the boundaries. And he dedicated his life to it. And he wasn't stupid. If he wasn't getting anything back from it, he would have given it up. He never did. And I believe he really did. Like even some of the wilder claims that he's made, I think he did. I think he did them. But he was a twat. So what is that? Well, that's putting dynamite, psychedelics, psychology, psychic powers, magical powers into the hands of a child. That's putting like live grenades, pulling the pins out, and putting it into the hands of a child. That's what ayahuasca is in the West, as far as I'm concerned. You can point to this guru or that guru, and I'm telling you now, and I'm not just being difficult, I care very, very much. I don't really like adults. I always say I don't like people. I don't really like adults because they're shit, really. Freud said that towards the end of his life. He was like, after studying people my whole life, I can tell you that mostly beneath the surface, people are shite. But kids who haven't had the chance to be shitified yet, by the vagaries of this cruel world are innocent. So as you're on that scale of youth, I have more sympathy for you, because if somebody abuses me now, I have the agency and the power to fuck them up. But when I was a child, I didn't. And I'm saying child, even when I was 21, I didn't know what to do when people would do this and that thing to me. So I was vulnerable. So I won't say kids, I'll say the vulnerable. I'll say the vulnerable. I have a lot of sympathy for the vulnerable. And there's nothing that you could do or say to convince me that any ayahuasca school or retreat anywhere in Europe is fulfilling the very stringent standards I would have for the kind of work that they're doing. I'm just going to come right out and say it. People who are druggies, who are fucking dropouts, who don't pay their phone bills, who still actually live at home with their parents, who are in debt, who are in trouble with the law, who have a string of broken relationships and kids that they don't fucking pay child support for, are not leaders and they're not guides. By their deeds, not their words, shall ye know them. They're fucking posturing nincompoops and they do more damage than good. End of. There are no shortcuts. If you're a twat on the authentic scale, I don't care how high you've been. You could have traveled astrally to the other fucking side of the universe, upside down, on one leg, backwards for all I give a fuck. You're not qualified. Am I saying that I am? No, I'm not. But I'm saying all this, sound and light show. Sound and light show, it's nothing. This is the resolution of your pain, as the Buddha would call it, dukkha. It's your dukkha, which become the resolution of which becomes your dharma as a result of your karma. Have I done any of this? Yes, I have. Do I want to lead you? No, not really. Not really. I don't think I have the capability to do it. The only thing I want to do is share ideas with people. Leaders should lead, and I'm an outsider. I'm a lone wolf in my heart. I'm a bard, a gypsy, a lone wolf, a traveler. I'm not a leader. I don't want to form a movement. It's too much responsibility, and I don't think it would be right for me to try and do something that I'm not comfortable doing, which is why when we're talking about doing the retreats, the actual retreats themselves have to be run by somebody else, and I'm there to offer insight and guidance because I know my limits. That's all it is. And I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm the most humble person on earth. I have no narcissistic traits. I have narcissistic traits. I have an ego, but I know that I do. And that is what makes me on the authentic scale slightly higher up than other people who are struggling through. I have resolved my childhood trauma. I have resolved relationship trauma. Why? Because I'm prepared to do the work. Because I tried shortcutting it for years. It didn't work. It doesn't. You're still a cunt. That's the conclusion I came to. I was like, I'm still a cunt. I'm still acting like a cunt because I'm in pain. And because I'm in pain, I'm hurting people. And I'm being irresponsible with other people's feelings. And I'm calling it humor, or I'm calling it my eccentricity. But 2014, a very rainy day in Malaysia, I decided to do something that I advise you all to do, that I promise you will have way more positive impact on you than wasting your time trying to escape this reality and shortcut your growth through taking DMT or ayahuasca or anything else. Take out a pen and a piece of paper and remain sober and remain in this reality and just take an objective look at who you are from the point of view of other people. Just write it down. How do you think other people see you? Do you think they see you as kind? Do you think they see you as loyal? Do you think that they see you as balanced? Do you think that they see you as cruel? Write it down and do the exercise. Drift out of your body and visualize you're another person looking at you. Look at your everything. Everything. This is not politically correct. This is factually correct. Get granular. What's your ethnicity? So what's your environment? When I did it, I was a fat and muscly, shaven-headed white man in Malaysia. So I went, well, Malaysia is predominantly Chinese. It's Chinese, Malay, and Indian. You have Iranians and Bengalis there, but those are the predominant ethnic groups. I was like, how do you think they see you? And I was like, oh, shit. They see me as some British thug. They probably think I'm a drug dealer. Are you? No. What are you? Well, at that time, I'd started Spartan Life Coach, and my predominant effort was to try and help people recover from childhood trauma and from abusive relationships. And I was like, well, if people can't see that about you, who's not fault, but whose responsibility is that? All right. It's mine. Yeah. Yeah. It's yours. Your dharma is yours. Your puzzle, your burden is yours. It's nobody else's. Your feelings about that are yours. I know I'm a stuck record. I know I repeat myself. But if you won't face your emotions and you won't process them and you won't grieve, you'll never grow. This on the authentic scale is really resolution of trauma, which is grief and the processing of your emotions. And you can't fake it. You can't fake it. I love it because I get people coming up to me going, I've been doing the Stop Emotional Flashback course for a month and it's not working. I'm like, you're doing it for a month? Are you doing it 5 times a day? Yes. Oh, yes. Every day. I'm like, you don't look like somebody who has been having a quiet, kind word with themselves 5 times a day for 30 days. There's no shortcuts. There are faster ways of getting things done. You're reducing your emotional flashbacks. Even your emotional literacy. You want a psychedelic experience. Commit to your emotional literacy. There's no calm down. You don't need the drug for the insight. You will see life more clearly. You will think more clearly when you eradicate and waft away the clouds of emotional confusion. You'll see things way more clearly. People don't want to do it. No, not anything but that. I'd do anything to heal. Just not that. Just not taking responsibility and healing my emotions. There must be a drug. There must be a pill. There must be a surgery. The longer I'm alive, and the more I do this work, the more and more I'm reminded of the stories that I was obsessed with in my teens. You know, I was this teenage kid, full of trauma, desperately trying to escape life. And I'd walk around with a little book of Buddhist stories, Tales of the Buddha, in my pocket. It was you may remember these little books. It was from Shambhala. There were Shambhala Classics. And when you went to the big bookstores, most of which are gone now, at the front desk when you'd bought your main book, you could buy like a little backup book that would only be £3. And it would be some wisdom book from the East. I had one of them. And you'd read the old stories of like masters dealing with students and Buddhist monks talking to people who were not yet initiated. And this sort of like this circular conversation around, can I avoid doing the work? Because in Buddhism, it would be meditation. What's the solution? Meditation. Can I make it faster? No. What was the old story? It was like, if I meditate today, how long will it take me to get enlightened? About 10 years. And how long will it take for me to get enlightened if I try twice as hard and double down on the meditation effort, thinking that the master is going to say, 5 years. And he says, no, 20. The harder you try to rush it, the longer it's going to take. Last little insight. You came to watch a video about ayahuasca. Are there any drugs I'd recommend? No. Don't take drugs. You're stealing your opportunity to grow. You're not. There is no drug. There is no external substance that you're supposed to put into you to change who you are, because there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. And you might be thinking, fucking hell, what's he mean? Does he mean I'm not in pain? Yes, you're in pain, but you don't need anything adding to you. The essence of who you are is perfect. It's perfect. I'm not saying you're a unique fucking unicorn snowflake, but the essence of what you are is perfect. You are simply in pain. And the best thing to do when you're in pain is to process it authentically and properly. If we yank it out of you, or use some process that won't work. Show me the person who was riddled with childhood trauma and complex PTSD, went to an ayahuasca ceremony, and was miraculously cured. Oh no, sorry, before you do, there's plenty of people claiming that they are. Just as in Christianity and in other faiths, you'll always find somebody who's saying, I gave my trust to the Lord and I stopped drinking and everything was okay. That's part of their addiction. Part of their life fiction, in the Adlerian sense, is to tell people a story in which, oh my God, if you just do ayahuasca, and then I took it and I spoke to Mother Ayahuasca, and you know, now I'm just like so balanced. And you're looking at them going, you're so balanced. Reality is reality. Reality is reality. And at the end of the day, we have to live with ourselves. We have to, you got to wake up with you. You got to go to sleep with you. Our world, this modern world we've created, has become, as Guy Debord predicted, the society of the spectacle, where the symbol replaces the authentic. But how long can that last for? You can convince other people, you can go on social media and do your fucking monkey signaling that you're enlightened and you're spiritual and you had a drug experience and all of your life's problems were resolved in one night. But at the end of the day, you know that's a lie. I just want you to know it's a poisonous lie, because you're giving false hope to the vulnerable. You're giving false hope to people who really are fucking desperate for help. And if you tell them that story and they go to an ayahuasca ceremony like the one I went to, that could be the thing that tips them over the edge, that makes them finally give up hope. So don't do it. Don't give people false hope. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. Well, I look forward to hearing from my egoless, enlightened friends from the ayahuasca community. Deleting and blocking their hashtag triggered comments. I hope that was useful. I hope I gave you an honest insight. I tried not to hold anything back out of fear of repercussions, and I tried to be fair. I really, really strongly advise people not to try and use drugs to resolve their problems. You're not on this earth to do that. That's not the right thing to do. Maybe there is a place for drugs in some other context. I'm not saying that there isn't. I don't know. I'm not like some rigid anti-drug guy. It's not that. It's that a lot of people clearly turn up to resolve mental health issues, childhood trauma issues. They clearly turn up to ayahuasca ceremonies to do that. And it's not right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time and for your attention. And I hope I convinced you to do the work. First piece of the work for today is to be extremely grateful for everything that you do already have. I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Cheers.